Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.
Welcome to Jonah, Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time. This time we are in the great northern part of the state, up in Schuyler County, right on the Iowa line, with Commissioner Drew Bruner. Commissioner, thank you so much for the hospitality here in this beautiful courthouse.
Oh, thanks for coming up here.
Adrian Starbuck with the Missouri Farm Bureau, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Well, thanks for being here.
We are fortunate to have Carolyn Applegate with the Historical Society. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you very much.
Marilyn Campbell, as I understand, your sister.
Yes.
I can see it. Also with the Historical Society. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And Ms. Betty Duncan, also with the Historical Society. Thank you for being here. I love the t-shirts. It looks like you have an active Historical Society. That's awesome.
We do.
Schuyler County was formed on February 14, 1845, the 83rd county formed. 308 square miles of northern Missouri, right on the county line, beautiful rolling hills. Named for General Philip Schuyler, a delegate to the Continental Congress and a U.S. Senator from New York. We are here in the county seat of Lancaster, right almost by Iowa. Drew, let me just ask you, what kind of Indian tribes settled here before any white settlers came?
The Sac, Fox, and Iowa tribes. They were nomadic tribes, so they didn't, you know, have a place that they called home, but they would kind of move with game. They would move up and down the rivers. They would move, you know, based upon the weather, the season. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, obviously are the first people to live here. Yes.
Tell me something about the first settlers. I've got, they thought maybe the first permanent white settler was a person named Moses Stice
that,
in 1834-35, but they didn't seem real confident about that.
Well, what we have, that does seem to be accurate. He came here and made the first settlement. The first permanent settlement in the county was made in the southeast corner by Moses Stice late in 1834, the early part of 1835.
Was it on a river or just crossroads? Or
it was over by Downing,
south of Downing.
Is now.
Gotcha. Well, ma'am, let me just ask you, how'd your family come to live here in Schuyler County?
My grandfather, Tom Campbell, and his wife, Norma, moved here in 1929, and they purchased a farm and moved around just a little bit. He was a sawyer. He felled timber, had a sawmill that he would take around to different sites.
Where did he come from before he settled here?
He was in Unionville, in Putnam County, actually. They were in that area.
And terrific high school mascot.
Yes.
Outstanding. So where do you live at today?
I live on the farm that my grandfather
Now, where is it from here in Lancaster? How'd we get there from Lancaster?
Go west across 63 and on Route AA, I am about 5 miles west of Lancaster.
Gotcha. So, Ms. Carolyn, I assume that your family was the same lineage as her family, seeing your
yes,
sisters.
Yes, that is true.
Where do you live at today?
I live at Applegate Airport at Queen City. Yes, just south of Queen City. We own and operate the airport.
Oh, that's a great, that's an interesting business. What do you do, a lot of crop dusting? What kind of business comes to the airport?
Well, my husband, his father started that airport back in 1964, mostly just to have a place to fly out of.
Yeah.
And over the years, that airport has grown, and it's still a grass strip. It's lit. But there have been so many businesses that use it. Western's Meat Market used it. Back in the day when Bryce Norman was the undertaker here in Lancaster, he actually flew bodies in and out of there at times. There is a very, very active business going there on there now. CB Aerial Application is a thriving agricultural application business that's utilizing that airport right now. And it's amazing. There are planes taking off every single day, it seems like.
That's outstanding. That's
great. And all day long, I meant all day, every day. Not just once, all day.
That's great to hear. That's really cool. Mr. Starbuck, how did you come to live here in Schuyler County, your family?
Well, my family would have moved here sometime in the 1870s. I moved here from Tennessee. My parents, they live on the place that was first settled.
Where's that at from here in Lancaster?
Well, it'd be 5 miles east of Queen City on Route 80.
Okay.
So, I don't know, it's what, 12 miles from here or something like that, south and east.
Ms. Betty, how did your family come to live here in Schuyler County?
My father was born in Downey, and his great-grandfather came in 1847, right after the county was formed. So his family's been here for a long time. I was born and raised in Adair County, but my husband's from Schuyler County, and with all that, I'm interested in Schuyler County genealogy, so that's how I got involved with the Historical
Society.
That's
how you ended up in that nice t-shirt, right?
Yeah, that's right.
They get you to bring you in. Drew, let me ask you, the Honey War, did it come this way?
Yes.
What was Schuyler County's impact in the Honey War?
Well, when it comes to the Honey War, most of the players, I guess you'd call it the Honey War, it was more centered around Clark County, you know, their sheriff. Mm-hmm. But it did move the boundary of our county. What was it? Is it 9?
11. I think it was 11 miles.
So, and actually that, whenever the Supreme Court ruled on it and they ended up moving the boundary, a lot of the residents in the county later on wanted, you know, the county seat to be the center of the county. A lot of the people had started, you know, to settle towards the center of the county. And then once it was moved, you know, the center is no longer the center. Mm-hmm. So having said that, that was an issue later on. But yeah, the Honey War, even though it was the Iowa governor and the sheriff and his little militia from Clark County, it still impacted us here and our border here, yes.
So I read where ultimately it was handled by the Supreme Court of the United States, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But there was a claim, theoretically, to put Missouri almost up to Des Moines. Mm. If you follow the river, there was their argument was that all should be Missouri.
Yeah.
Really, the ruling was pretty favorable to Iowa when it came down. They moved the line pretty far south. The county seat politics are the most interesting things you'll find about every city. Tippecanoe, I was the first county seat. Is that correct? Now,
yes.
How would you get to Tippecanoe from here?
You would go out Route D and follow it out until you come to Route V. And right about there, probably, a mile east, if that.
Not even that. Maybe an eighth of a mile.
Where the old county shed is now.
Yes, right across the road from there. And my dad had a friend, a friend of his owns the ground where Tippecanoe was. And I can remember when I was a kid going out there after he had worked the ground and finding like little pieces of china out there in the field.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so. But Tippecanoe was the original county seat. Very crude, though. I mean, it wasn't a county seat for very long, and it was, I would assume, named after the Battle of Tippecanoe. About the time it was formed was the same time that William Henry Harrison was running for president. William Henry Harrison was the leader of the federal troops at the Battle of Tippecanoe, which happened in Indiana in 1811, which is federal troops and militias against a couple Indian tribes. So it's odd that, you know, the same time that the town is formed, the hero of Tippecanoe is running for president. So I would assume either one of the early settlers fought the Battle of Tippecanoe, or they was big fans of William Henry Harrison and named it after him. So.
And then, but that fight wasn't over, right? Well, let's talk about this building we're in right now. In June of 1855, the commissioners chose Lancaster as the county seat. Now that's, as you said, the more central locations, what the mm-hmm. thought was there?
Yes.
There's not really a spot in the dead center of Schuyler County. Lancaster's a shade to the north, right? Mm-hmm. But is east-west, it's in the center. They put together a two-story, which is kind of odd for the time, 20 by 24 courthouse, built by a gentleman named Cahill Parks for $200 they bought from the sale of lots here in Lancaster. If you built something in 1845, it just wasn't going to last all that long, right? This one must have been built very well, because I read even after they had condemned it, it was destroyed by fire. It lasted 40 years, which, with the building materials they had at the time, that ain't bad. That's kind of like, you know, that's how commissioners stretch that money out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to do what you got to do.
Squeezing every dime. I found there was a really unusual order from the commission, though. they had an order to paint two sides of the building red and two sides white. And they found that, and then they rescinded it a few weeks later because it was going to be too expensive.
And I believe the original courthouse was north of this courthouse right here. I think it was actually a block north. And then later, when they built the second courthouse, it was moved to where we are right now.
And I read where the court, then they had to put up $10,000 for a courthouse built in 1856, which is a precarious time to build something in Missouri. We'll get to the Civil War here in a second. But William Shane built the courthouse, and he brought it in for $9,000. Now, that's a commissioner oversaw project, ain't it?
Sure,
yes. It came in under budget, which you don't really see a lot. There was a point where Queen City challenged Lancaster for the seat. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So did that go to a vote, or how'd they settle it?
I don't really know that. Do you have that answer, Drew?
I read where Lancaster put up like $7,500 from the city to do it, and then they had a lot of private folks throw in extra money.
There was a petition from Queen City residents to move it, but the petition failed. They just couldn't get enough traction. So when that was in 1894, when they tried to move it to Queen City. So.
I had read where part of it was they did inspire the city of Lancaster to put up some money to keep it, and then some folks that live in Lancaster paid some private. So it ended up, they almost got a courthouse without a ton of county money. That courthouse was continued in use till this current one was built for just a little north of $250,000. This courthouse built in 1960, it is, you all have maintained a bit of historical feel to it though.
Yes.
One of the newer courthouses of the state, but it still kind of has a feel of some history about it.
Probably can't afford to update it. It's probably you got a county of 4,000 people, you don't have a lot of tax dollars coming in.
Yep.
Know,
so. Well, I was excited that you were a Civil War guy, because yep. Commissioner, I think I'll just ask you, tell me about the Civil War here in Schuyler County.
The residents of Schuyler County were predominantly pro-Southern, not saying that there wasn't a good part of them pro-Northern, because, I mean, like the town of Lancaster, for instance, it was named after Lancaster, Ohio, where one of the original members moved here from, and that that just tells you right there that the residents, as anyone knows, most of the settlers of Schuyler County were from Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia. They had pro-Southern leanings. A lot of our residents that moved here from Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, or even just off the boat, coming over here from Germany, leaned pro-Northern. The county as a whole was pretty much pro-Southern. You can read some old newspaper articles that talk about a lot of, when the war broke out, a lot of bushwhacking, a lot of just, for lack of a better word, bullying or threats. And there was a lot of pro-Northern men that were ran off to Iowa, or they had to move their family to Illinois because of so many threats. Civil War breaks out, and there is, right off the bat, there is four or five kind of pro-Southern prominent men that raise companies in the county. This is in 1861. It doesn't have to do with Schuyler County, but the first major event we have in the Civil War is the Battle of Lancaster, which happened on November 24th, 1861. How that came to be was there was a 1st Northeast Missouri Home Guard that was formed by a man named David Moore, who is from Clark County. Well, he originated from Wooster, Ohio, and he was pro-Northern. Civil War breaks out. There is a pro-Southern faction from Lewis County under a man named Martin Green. He's a county judge. They have, and if you ever go to Clark County, the Battle of Athens. It's on August 5th, 1861. The Union troops win a resounding victory. They send Martin Green and his troops end up retreating south, eventually cross the Missouri River, join Sterling Price, fight the Battle of Lexington, and the rest is history. Martin Green's killed by a sharpshooter at the Battle of Vicksburg in 1863. But these Northern men that are in the 1st Northeast Missouri Home Guard, they remain in Northeast Missouri for the remainder of 1861. Their main objective is to recruit enough men to actually be mustered into federal service, which I think at the time there was 848 men. I could be wrong on that, pretty close. They had around 450 men. There was also a second Northeast Missouri Home Guard under a man named Humphrey Woodyard from Lewis County. He had about the same. but neither one of them wanted to give up their command. So they were both trying to recruit enough men to get their regiments into federal service. Well, while David Moore is stationed in northern Missouri, Benjamin Prentiss, who ends up becoming a brigadier general and fighting at the Battle of Shiloh, is the commander of northeast Missouri. He keeps hearing reports daily about the terrorism getting out of hand in Schuyler County. So much bushwhacking, you know, threatening, running off all the pro-northern men. So finally he gets a hold of David Moore and says, you've got to do something. David Moore marches on the town of Memphis, which is in Scotland County. It's it's east of us. And a delegation of Schuyler, pro-northern men from Schuyler County go over to Memphis, and they plead with David Moore, do not come over here. You know, just, we don't want bloodshed in our town. David Moore won't hear any of it. Early on the morning of November 24th, 1861, David Moore's 1st Northeast Missouri Home Guard comes to Lancaster. There is a man named John McCauley who is leading a company of pro-Southern men, and he they meet their advance guard just east of town here. There's a skirmish. There is 4 pro-Southern men killed there. No one on the northern side is killed. Then they retreat just west of town here. The Union troops come to County Square. They stop. The reports is that it was getting in the afternoon. The sun was starting to go down. So David Moore leads his infantry and mixed cavalry west of town here, where John McCauley and his men are held up in a ravine west of town. There's hand-to-hand fighting. The fighting is quick, but pretty brutal. There's 13 pro-Southern men killed there, and one northern man is killed there, and he's buried in the city cemetery here. So in all, there was 17 state guardsmen killed at the Battle of Lancaster. There was one pro-northern home guardsman killed. An interesting note about the Battle of Lancaster is this John McCauley, who was a captain of the state guard, in the battle, he was killed. So was 2 of his sons and his son-in-law's brother, and they're all buried at the Bethel Cemetery. Wow. West of here. And there was a chaplain for the home guards. His name was John Cox. He wrote later in a newspaper in St. Louis that we had, quote, cleaned out one traitorous family with all the deaths of McCauley, his sons, and his son-in-law's brother. But after that,
did a battle tamp the, I mean, I assume after the battle they left a few people and left. Mm-hmm. Did that stop the bushwhacking?
No, it didn't. It got worse. And so Moore ends up, and actually if you look at the 21st Missouri, they end up becoming the 21st Missouri Regiment in Canton. And if you look at their, a lot of Schuyler County men joined right after the Battle of Lancaster. If you look at their roles. So there's a lot of men buried around here who are veterans of the 21st Missouri Infantry. Moore leaves. They end up going. They fight the Battle of Shiloh. He loses a leg. You know, they complete the rest of the war. But Schuyler County is pretty much left to bushwhacking the rest of the war. There's a couple other small. There is numerous skirmishes in town, or around town with enrolled Missouri militia. One notable one. There's a man named leading pro-Southern bushwhackers that attacked the town. His name's William Searcy. He is wounded in the chest. This is in 1862, and he is taken to Macon, and he is one of 10 men that are executed at Macon. And this was a time in the war, 1862, Prentiss was gone, a man named John McNeil was in charge of the Union troops, and it was a time where, you know, you saw the Battle of Kirksville, this action in Lancaster, the Palmyra Massacre, whenever there's a lot of executions of pro-Southern men who had taken the oath of office, or taken the oath of allegiance to the United States, they realized that they had violated that oath, and there was 4 or 5 mass executions in northern Missouri at that time, and one of our own got caught up in that. We also, there was a battle around, at the time, Downing was called Cherry Grove. Colonel Joseph Porter in 1862, the lieutenant, he actually was under that Martin Green I talked about earlier. They went down south. Sterling Price sent him back up here on a recruiting mission. He kicked off what we call Porter's 1862 campaign, which mean most notable battles, the Battle of Astor Hill, which happened over by Bible Grove, Battle of Kirksville in Adair County. But one of the initial fights of that campaign happened at Cherry Grove I believe it was run the 1st of July, 1862. Not very many casualties in that, but that kind of kicked that off.
It's interesting how no matter what, whether you're on the Arkansas line or the Iowa line, start off generally with Southern sympathies, but really want to be left alone. I think that was a general thought of everyone in Missouri. Is,
yes.
Feel kind of bad for the South, but just leave us alone. Then the bushwhacking kind of turns folks from the Southern cause, and then as the war, they just lost a few folks. Every one of these, like I said, intimidations or whatever, even when a family left, I mean, that hurts the overall economy. They just didn't have the supplies to sustain themselves, and the anarchy turned the folks to law and order.
It did, and, you know, I could sit here and talk about several just small engagement skirmishes that happened throughout the war with bushwhackers and enrolled militia or federal troops. But, I mean, pretty much, you know, the war winds down, and I did see a newspaper article that said that after the Civil War was over, the county of Lancaster, or the county, sorry, the town of Lancaster, was basically just trashed. I mean, yeah. It was in ruins. I mean, you know, you think about that for 4 years, how many different factions are riding into town and eating and getting out of the gardens and using
foraging,
and you know, using the fences for fires or this or you know, using people's houses or buildings. 4 years of that, of back and forth, they said the town of Lancaster was just basically trashed from the Civil War and had to start to rebuild. So that is
an outstanding history.
What
I call this is the 91st county we've been to. That is the most detailed accounting of the Civil War in a county I've ever heard.
I could go longer, but yeah, I do.
No, I really appreciate that. That is so much better than you'd find anywhere in the state archives or anywhere else.
I've been in the Civil War since I was a kid, since I was 5 years old. My parents took me to a reenactment at Keokuk, Iowa, I think, Battle Athens, and ever since then, I've just been into it, and I've been into local history. So,
Carolyn, okay, tell me about the Historical Society here in town.
We are very blessed to have this Historical Society. We have a lot of different events that we try to host to bring people to see the collections that have been donated. Sandra Redding, I want to mention her name. She was amazing. She was like the heart and soul for the last, I don't know how many years.
Probably 10 or 15.
10 or 15
think?
Years. And I can't remember who was in charge before that.
Marilyn Foreman.
But both of those ladies had a heart for history, and they organized and helped create a warm atmosphere at the Historical Society. Since then, Marilyn has become the president of the Historical Society, and we are trying to make it more approachable. We want people to come in on a regular basis. We offer tours. The genealogy room is amazing. Betty has been instrumental in putting together resource books, binders on so many different topics. And we receive emails, Marilyn especially.
Tell me about some of the exhibits you have there now.
Oh, we have wonderful exhibits. Of course, the home where we are housed belonged to W.P. Hall, William Preston Hall. And he's most well known for being a circus owner, enthusiast. He leased animal acts is what he ended up doing. So we have a lot of items from Mr. Hall himself. We have in our music room, we have displays about the Vincent family. Rhonda Vincent and the Rage, she's from Greentop, and she is the queen of bluegrass music. And her brother Darren Vincent is the Vincent half of Daly and Vincent, and so we have some information about them. We have a wonderful picture that was painted by Tony Moore of a gentleman by the name of Bob Melvin. He was born here, and he had a deformity of his face. It was a
neurofibromatosis.
Thank you. I can never remember that word. And what he nicest man you'd ever meet in your entire life. He was just so nice. And he and his wife toured with a carnival, and he toured in Coney Island quite a lot. They would spend the summers out there with their daughter, and he had quite an act as the two-faced man. At the end of his act, he would sell Bibles that were 1 inch in size. So he was a unique individual, and he was just so nice.
He was in a few movies as well.
He was. He was in one called Being Different, and I can't recall the name of the other one at this point. We have clothing displays upstairs. We have some clothing items from the Hall daughters, Sydney Hall Bunch. We have a raccoon coat that was worn by Billy Hall Jr. and that was donated by Garth Sylvie, I believe. We have quilts, lots of handmade quilts that have been donated to us. Lots of organizations throughout the years would do what they would call name quilts. Is there another name for that, Betty?
Autograph
quilts. And we have a lot of those that we have on display. Our war room is probably the most unique room in that it's a war memorial room. And we have displays of uniforms from all the different eras of the war, of different wars. We have the first woman's uniform who served from Schuyler County during World War II, and Azalee Kimbrell. We have uniforms from a Mr. Funk, who was served at the Battle of the Bulge and then later went on to be in the MPs. We have somebody brought back a Nazi uniform from somewhere. So we have that we have displayed, a little war souvenir.
With a swastika on it.
Complete with the swastika. We have a huge Civil War flag with 32 stars on it that we have in a glass display case. And we have a large map of Andersonville Prison that we have on the wall.
I love the passion. We just want to take a break and thank our sponsors, Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, and Missouri Association of Counties, letting us come to places like Lancaster, talk about the history of Schuyler County. We'll be right back and talk about Schuyler County today after this.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what-ifs and more about the why-nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance.
The Show Me Missouri podcast is brought to you by our friends at HALO, Heartland Area Landowners. HALO is a membership-based organization for folks interested in farming the sun and the wind. HALO members are passionate about their land, our world, and stewarding the resources that feed America, power, and its economy. Farming the sun and wind has incredible benefits for farmers, landowners, and all Missouri communities, all while helping secure America's energy independence. To learn more about HALO and how you can get involved, visit heartlandowners.farm. That's heartlandowners.farm.
Welcome back to Show Missouri. This is Missouri One County Time. Schuyler County this week, right up on the Iowa line. You take 63 all the way to Iowa, and right before you get there, you were in Schuyler County. Mr. Starbuck, tell me about where do people work at here in Schuyler County?
Well, there's, of course, there's a school, there's a county. Westerns, they make meat sticks and green top, mm-hmm. but that supplies a lot of jobs around. Mm-hmm. I know people from several counties over that work there.
What's the name of the company?
Westerns. They make snack sticks.
Yeah. What do people grow around here? I always know agriculture is a big deal.
Well, it's primarily it's livestock country, but there's still a lot of row crop, corn and beans.
With your hills slope in a way, you could do some row crops, it looks like.
Yes.
With corn probably for sure, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans in the county as well. So
rough time to be a soybean farmer, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
It's a tough time. So do people commute anywhere, or they pretty much work, they live where they work here?
Kirksville gets a lot of people to work there, and then of course there's other towns around Bloomfield and mm-hmm. Memphis. They see some of our people as well.
Drew, tell me about the politics in North Missouri. Is it the rest of the state's kind of had a trend of slowly voting, going from Democrat to Republican federally, and then sometime around Trump, even the courthouses became.
The whole time I was growing up, and even before, obviously before I was, it was even here, Schuyler County was a predominantly Democrat county. Now my dad was county sheriff for 20 years, and he was almost everyone in the courthouse, but a couple of them was Democrats. But everything has changed. I would say that the politics of the Schuyler County Courthouse today are predominantly Republican. like my old neighbor told me, I didn't leave them, they left me. So I'd say that...
The folks probably ain't changed much.
No, they're exactly the same. But this, you know, what we've got going on nationally has kind of impacted us. But, you know, that's the thing about local politics. And, like, I'm a county commissioner. It doesn't matter what party I am. It does not change one thing that I do up here, you know. And that's one thing I think that national politics that really annoys me is that and got me interested in it. You know, I said my dad was county sheriff for 20 years. I love how this country was founded to where being a politician wasn't your career. It wasn't even, you know, it was, you know, you were, they were farmers, they were bankers, they were blacksmiths, they were clockmakers. And they, you know, all the time they're at work and they're at home, they're talking to their neighbors or constituents, you know, people down the street, their families, and they're gathering ideas, and then they're going into the courthouse or the state house or the Capitol and doing a service for the people that live around them, not making a career out of it, becoming a millionaire. You know, when I ran for county commissioner, I didn't do it for the money. I didn't think, oh, I can't wait to get rich. I did it because it interests me, and I felt a calling to help out my neighbors, and that's what we try to do. And that's the nice thing about a small county is that you really don't get bogged down in red or blue. That's the way I see it.
Sure. Ms. Carol, tell me about the schools.
The school is situated in Queen City. Originally, we had, of course, the country schools, and then those turned into regional schools and town schools. We had an elementary at Glenwood and Downing and then Greentop. Eventually in the 70s, we built the elementary down at Queen City, and those children were all from all of the towns were sent to Queen City. Several years later, we did the same thing with the junior high, and now the high school is also...
Is it called Schuyler County?
It is Schuyler County R1.
Was it down in Queen City?
It is. I taught there for 28 years, so I kind of have a passion for that school district.
So it became centralized about, when did they finally establish the high school there?
I believe the high school was, Drew, was it in the early 90s?
1999 is whenever the high school moved from, my freshman year high school, which started in 99, was the first year for that high school in Queen City.
Okay.
Before that it was Lancaster. Mm-hmm. So.
All right, who's the rival?
Well, back in the day it was Putnam County and Scotland County.
Mm-hmm.
But
my name is Clark.
Okay. But it's because of the low numbers of
that population.
The population, and then the kids anymore, and it's not just Schuyler County will tell you that they're just not going out for sports. We had to go to 8-man football, for instance.
Yeah.
So we don't play Putnam County and Scotland County anymore. We have to go to travel to North, you know, we still do play North Shelby, and we still do play Knox County. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, we still, you know, now we're going to outside of Kansas City and outside of St. Joe.
Yeah.
But, yes. And, you know, basketball, baseball, softball, we're still playing all the counties around us. So,
yeah. Is there a big game or just whenever you play Putnam, Scotland, it's a big game?
Yeah, and we are pretty, it goes in spurts with kids, but, you know, baseball and basketball, we're pretty competitive with those schools. And, you know, of course, the kids, you know how it is. They grow up. And even the ones that you know, play travel ball, they're playing with kids from Unionville and from Memphis. And, yeah, it gets pretty competitive. And they definitely means a little bit more if you beat Scotland County versus if you beat a team from St. Louis.
Whoever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, tell me, we touched on this a minute ago, but W.P. Hall, tremendous American showman, had businesses around the world, essentially brought in circus, but it was heavily animal-focused, correct?
Yes, that's correct. He originally started out buying and selling horses and mules, and he did quite well with that. In fact, at one point in his career, he was spending between $7,000 and $10,000 a week, which would, in today's money, would be about $350,000 buying horses and mules. And he supplied horses for the Boer War for the British officers. He sold horses to fire departments, one in Philadelphia. He supplied the American Express Company with horses for their business. He did also a few to the Pony Express, but American Express was his biggest contract at that time. He and his brother established a sale barn in Virginia, and then as he grew, he traveled, he sold horses overseas, and so he traveled with them, and it said he's the first American to do that, to travel with his animals, and he would travel around Europe, and that's when he first became interested in the circus. And he was at the 1904 World's Fair, and there was a circus that was going under. They couldn't afford to feed their animals, and so Mr. Hall smelled the deal. And so he purchased this circus that was going under, and he also bought a couple of more then after that, amassed them all together and brought them up here to Lancaster, where he had already in place stables and huge barns for his animals. And so he would he started this circus that was called the Great W.P. Hall Show, and they toured for most of 1 year, and he did not like it. He did not like being away from home. It wasn't profitable. He was neglecting his business at home. They had trouble with trains, and a tent blew down, and he decided he wasn't doing that anymore. But what he did figure out was that small circuses cannot get bankrolled by a bank. And so he would lease them acts, predominantly elephants. He had a large selection of elephants that he purchased. His brother would go to India and Africa and buy these elephants and bring them back and train them. And they had all the menagerie animals that you can imagine, acrobat acts, just anything that would be in a circus. And he leased these out. Well, at the end of the contract, if the circus that he leased to could not fulfill the obligation, then Mr. Hall foreclosed on all of it. And he cleaned up, so to speak. He sold a lot of mules to South African diamond mines. And there are legends that he was sometimes paid in raw diamonds. And he was a snappy dresser, and he had silk suits, a silk top hat, a Prince Albert style suit. And some of them are said to have been studded with diamonds. He had one suit that supposedly had $20,000 worth of diamonds on it. And he had a diamond walking stick, and so he became known as Diamond Billy Hall. He was quite generous to the community. He bought a calliope organ for the Christian church. If children wanted a pony, he would give them a pony. Now, there was kind of a little deal there where they had the pony, they had to feed it, take care of it, and then when he was ready to sell those ponies, then he took the pony, but they could have it replaced if they still wanted a pony. So it was kind of a win-win deal. The kids would break the pony and they would get it all ready to go.
Intelligent philanthropy.
He was a very intelligent man. Supposedly he could not read or write, or if he could, it was only a little bit. His wife was his secretary, and she took care of a lot of the documentation that he did, but he was very astute in business matters.
That's great. I read about a gentleman named Farrell Dobbs, who was a socialist, who ran for president of the United States. And then I'd heard all these stories. What I didn't know was, if you've heard of Howard Hughes, the
yes.
great aviator, the yes. movie and all that, the great businessman, his family's from here, correct?
Yes.
His uncle, I assume Rupert Hughes was somehow related to them.
Rupert was Howard Hughes' brother. Howard Hughes Sr. and Rupert were brothers. There was also a sister named Greta, and there was
opera singer. She was an opera singer.
She was a, yes, world famous opera singer. And there was a fourth child, but he was actually born in Keokuk. But Howard Hughes Sr. was born here, and he was a bit of a rascal from what I've been able to read about him. He was very mechanically inclined. He'd take things apart. He got in trouble. They had cockfights around at that time, and he held one out behind their house where they lived, all expressly against his father's wishes, and his brother Rupert ratted on him. And so, of course, Howard summarily pummeled Rupert, and they had quite a deal there. His father was superintendent of schools here, but he was also a lawyer for the railroad. And that's how they ended up moving to Keokuk, was the father got promoted. And so the family moved there. They were quite talented. Apparently, Howard's father and mother were very liberal-minded. And Mrs. Hughes was determined that even though they lived here in a small town, that they were going to have a forward-thinking education. And so she really encouraged them to expand their horizons. And
seems like that worked.
It did. They did well.
Before I ask my favorite question, I love to ask.
Can I mention, yeah, there is another notable person that doesn't get mentioned a lot. A man named John Simmons. He was born in Lancaster. His parents ran the lumberyard in town. He was an extremely good athlete, attended, I don't know what it would have been called then. Now it's Truman State. Before that, it was Northeast Missouri State. Before that, it was Northeast Missouri Teachers College. Before that, it was probably Kirksville Normal School. Anyway, he ends up becoming a baseball coach at the University of Missouri and led the University of Missouri to their only College World Series championship in 1954, and he also was assistant football coach to Don Ferreau in all those years. And he was born right here in Lancaster, Missouri. Now he is buried in Columbia, but his parents, relatives are all buried in Lancaster, and he's from here. And he doesn't get brought up a lot, but it is neat that the University of Missouri has only won one College World Series in their entire history, and it was under the direction of John Simmons, born and raised in Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I always like to thank our sponsors, Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Counties, and the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, for letting us bring Show in Missouri and talk about the history of each county. Now I'd like to ask, Mr. Starbuck, if you were bringing somebody up to Schuyler County, where would you take them? What should they know?
Well, you've already talked about the museum, but I think one of the showcase things that I deal with in some of my dealing with youth is Bosco's Gun Club. Probably one of the best trap ranges around.
Yeah.
We got schools that they look forward to coming up here to shoot.
Ms. Betty, where would you take somebody here?
Well, I would take them to the museum, but I'd want them to go in, because I don't think a lot of the people that come and know that we have the museum know what we have inside. And a lot of the exhibits that we have been there for a long time. It's just that they weren't organized. And so that's something that the last few presidents have really worked on is putting everything together. We had things in drawers and we had things in closets. And now we have them.
Yeah.
We're trying to get all the genealogy things in one room instead of some in a closet upstairs. And it's easier to find things. If somebody comes and asks a question, now we're able to say, if you go to this room, you'll be able to see that exhibit, and we have more coming. So.
Yes.
Well, speaking of one of those present residents, where would you take someone in Schuyler County? What should they see?
Again, I would bring them to the museum, but not only the Schuyler County Historical Society Museum. Downing also has a very good museum. They have the Downing Depot, and they have a lot of memorabilia from there. But something we haven't mentioned about the museum here in Lancaster, the W.P. Hall Museum, is that we have on site a log cabin that was donated to us, and we also have a one-room school, the Green Valley one-room school. And so we have exhibits in those areas as well. And I just think that I just love the house. I love the history of the house, and everybody that's involved with it works so hard to get people to come. Just come and see. That's what we want you to do, to be part of our history, because you are. You're the history.
So what would you say, folks?
Well, besides the museum.
Yeah, besides the museum.
I think I would probably take them down to where the old mines used to be, between Glenwood and Coatesville.
Yes, down Coal Holler,
and down to the Mock Bridge. Yeah. I mean, it's just a beautiful area. My dad takes us for drives down there. He'll be 93 next month, and we go down, and he tells us where there was a canning factory, and you can still see some of the remnants of the old mines down in that area. As far as like
the Raven Mine and the slag piles.
The slag pile, and then there are even some entryways. There's some foundations that you can still see if you know where to look. But that was a thriving community at one point, and people just don't know that. And I'd love to share that piece of history as well.
All right.
Drew, where would you take somebody if you brought
them? Well, I'm last, so I'm going to...
Oh. I thought you'd be the guy that could go last.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm a nerd, so they probably wouldn't want to go very many places with me because I'd probably take them to some cemeteries and places like that. But if they just a common person, I tell you what we would do. We would just drive the roads. There, I know several just beautiful spots in Schuyler County. I should be able to tell you this because I'm a county commissioner, how many miles of dirt road we have left. And we don't have as many as we used to because of the wind turbine project that came through. And a lot of those roads got rocked. But we still do have several dirt roads in the county. We have a nine-hole golf course up here in Lancaster with a tremendous view from it over Spencer Lake, which is a lot of people come up and fish. Another thing that I was thinking about was Rebels Cove Conservation Area over on the Sheraton River where the mock bridge is that Carolyn talked about. Mm-hmm. Just the beautiful roads and back roads and gravel roads and some of the old houses, that's where I would go. Obviously, I could say the museum, but it's already taken. Our school, this wind turbine deal that came on was very divisive for the county, and I get it. I totally get both sides. But it injected a pile of money into our school, and I mean, we have state-of-the-art turf baseball fields.
That's cool.
And the inside of the school is so nice, and they really spent a lot of money in it. I'm very impressed every time I go in there. So just areas like that, our school and some of the land around and some of the neat places to see.
I think it makes a difference to a kid when they go in a nice school like that. It makes them think maybe it raises their horizons a little bit, makes them think more is possible. I think that matters.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for the hospitality. Thanks for letting us be here at the courthouse. I want to thank all of you for joining us here on Show Missouri. This is Missouri from Schuyler County. We'll see you next week.
Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.